Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. Today, we're discussing the Republican presidential field in light of the Iowa caucus results. I've got two perfect guests for the occasion, Congresswoman Ann Marie Burkle from the 25th District and Scott Armstrong, president of the lobbying firm Armstrong Communications. Scott also has past experience working in and running Republican political campaigns and conservative-oriented public action efforts. Congresswoman Burkle and Scott, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to start with a very simple question. Were there any big surprises for either of you in the outcomes or the aftermath of these caucuses so far?
For me, I think that Rick Santorum's surge toward in the last 2 weeks and the way he really was very close to Romney, I think that was, for me, it was a pretty big surprise.
I want to come back to that phenomenon of different people surging later, but that, so you didn't expect that then?
I didn't expect him to make that much ground up, that maybe he would have been third or fourth, but to tie pretty much with first place I think was pretty remarkable.
And Scott, anything struck you that
surprised you? Romney coming out on the top of the heat, albeit by 8 votes, I think was somewhat of a surprise. I don't think he was expected to have quite that showing in Iowa. Iowa is a quirky state. Its rules are unlike any other, and it lends itself to surprises, and I think that was a big one there.
And he kind of anticipated that, I think, at the end, and then all of a sudden put more of himself in the state.
They went all in at the very end when their numbers must have shown some movement there. And, you know, Santorum, who I think is a great campaigner and a great retail politician, you know, the surprise there is whether or not he sticks or not up in that upper echelon. You know, I don't know if it's success or he just had his turn peaking at the right time. I think time will tell.
Well, that's a segue to something that Congresswoman Burkle introduced too in her first comment that I wanted to probe a little bit with both of you in it. It seemed like in Iowa that everyone got their 15 minutes or 2 weeks or whatever time it was in the sun, and then they either faded or imploded or got beat up. Some combination of those three. And in fact, of the 7 candidates, 5 were at 1 point in the lead. And that's recognizing also that a 6th, John Huntsman, didn't actively campaign there. So that's a lot of volatility. And Santorum peaked, I think, at just the right time. So I guess the question for both of you in thinking about the field, thinking about kind of where the Republicans are, is how do you explain all the ups and downs of the different candidates during this campaign? What's going on there? Scott, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I think what it shows is an unsettled Republican field right now. There's a general dissatisfaction, and no one is getting a clear plurality or certainly not a majority at this point in time. Part of that might be symptomatic of just having this many viable candidates. There's a lot of good choices there. But there's also some pretty significant separations between what you'd consider the establishment of the Republican Party, the fairly newfounded Tea Party movement, and Christian conservatives who generally control the Iowa caucus. And those three teams have not suited up with the same uniform yet.
Yeah, I want to come back to that as a potential problem going forward, but Congresswoman Burkle, how do you explain all this ups and downs?
Well, I think what you're seeing, whether it's in Iowa or throughout the country, you're seeing a vetting of the Republican candidates, which is a good process. I think at the end of the day, you're going to see Republicans coalesce behind whoever the candidate is because of the importance of what they see is beating this president and being successful in 2012 and getting the White House back. So I think this is a vetting process. I think it's good for the Republican Party. It gives the American people a good opportunity to look at each candidate for what they stand for, whether they can withstand the scrutiny when they reach the top of the pinnacle, whether they can get back to the top. It's just an interesting process and good for the process, I think.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Congresswoman Ann Marie Burkle and Scott Armstrong about the Iowa caucus results. Well, Scott, you mentioned this just a minute ago, and this is another thing I wanted to ask you about. It also seems to me, at least, like this is, at this point, a relatively fractured Republican Party that we're looking at least judging by the candidates and some of their behavior and the things that they've said to each other. And I know there's this old joke about Democrats that when they need a firing squad, they form into a circle. And it now seems like that may apply to the Republicans, at least if you look at these candidates. I mean, you've got Ron Paul saying that he wouldn't support any of the other candidates. You've got Newt Gingrich saying he wouldn't support Paul. You've also got Gingrich with his apparent warning on the evening of some kind of payback to Romney for the negative ads, and it goes on. They certainly don't seem to be following Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment about not saying anything ill about a fellow Republican. So, Congresswoman, what does this indicate about this Republican coalition going into the general election? I mean, you mentioned that's a healthy vetting process, but is there another edge to this that concerns you as a Republican?
Well, of course, and Scott mentioned it already, but you are concerned about the establishment, what's perceived as the establishment Republican versus more conservatives, and that's the advantage Romney has in all of this. He's kind of running on that establishment Republican line, and the rest of them are running to the right of him, trying to figure out who's more conservative than the next, and they haven't, that field hasn't been figured out yet. So that's Romney's advantage. But again, I think it's the vetting process, and I think at the end of the day, Republicans and the American people, really not as partisan as you'd think, the American people, the issues are going to be more important to them and what vision we have for this country. And I think this is just a vetting process. And once the candidate is established, I think you're going to see a good cooperation and, you know, some will swallow a little bit harder than others, but they'll say this is more important that we get the White House back and we get back to Republican principles. And that's going to be more important to recapture the White House than to have this internal fighting.
But Scott mentioned this idea that they're not putting all not all suiting up in the same uniform. So if the candidates, though, at the top are really sort of emphasizing the edges of difference, I guess I want to probe how confident you are that that doesn't trickle down to the rank and file volunteers and also just ordinary average voters that begin to start listening to those edges of difference and that diminishes their ability to work together down the road.
Well, there are going to be differences. There's six different candidates, and there's going to be six in Iowa. And they are going to have, each one of them stands on their own merits and stands with a view different than the one next to him. However, at the end of the day, when that Republican candidate is chosen, I think then you're going to see, okay, let's get behind this person.
Scott, do you have thoughts about this coalition going forward?
Yeah, it'll get there, and I think the Congresswoman's exactly right. As sure as death and taxes, Democrats holding a grudge against each other will happen. But Republicans historically have been much better at holding their nose, taking a deep breath, and getting it done what needs to be done at the right time. There's two fundamental differences that are only increasing with time and technology. That is the fact that there's no longer a news cycle. News is 24/7, and so there's just this constant barrage of information. And there's also been, from my old hat of a campaign manager, a ridiculous number of debates, which some people like and some people don't. I think campaign manager's perspective, protecting your candidate is a big part of it. I'm not sure I would have liked or agreed to this regimen of a debate or two every week,
right,
because all it does is encourage you to find dirt on your opponents so that 4 days from now during the next debate you have something new to beat them over the head with. And, you know, that's airing an awful lot of dirty laundry in the public square, and it only encourages bad behavior in candidates and campaigns, I think. But we're so early. There's really nobody who's ultimately going to decide this election paying attention right now, because I always look at that middle 15%, and they're not worried one bit about what political junkies like myself or you or the congressman are worried about right now. We follow this all the time. The people that are ultimately going to decide the presidential race in 2012, but they're not paying attention yet. So we'll get there.
I want to come back to an aspect of that later, but let me stick with you and talk about the one candidate who's now out, Michelle Bachmann. She's out. Do you think she'd make a good vice presidential candidate eventually?
I don't know. It's generally a VP does not come out of the field. It comes out of someone who is going to add and lend something to the ticket. I think it's just too early to tell. You got to get closer to who your nominee itself is going to be before you start picking a VP. She's got a fairly large bag of gaffes that are going to come back to haunt her if she enters the public arena at the national level again. But God bless her. I think she ran a solid campaign. Any woman that can have six children of her own and 23 foster kids deserves much respect, particularly if you had a presidential campaign on top of that. She's got her issues like all candidates do, but I thought it was impressive. If you watched her concession speech when she did step out the other night, it was very graceful and eloquent and from the heart. And I think she's an impressive woman with a future. What that future is yet, I don't think we know.
Well, Congresswoman, follow up with you on that. I mean, you mentioned before this being a vetting process, and I guess where I was going with the question regarding Michelle Bachmann is, in a sense, she's kind of had her Sarah Palin experience, but she's had it early. So do you have any thoughts about her? I mean, I think in some ways the Republicans are going to be looking for a vice presidential nominee that will get attention, shake things up, and also appeal to these different pieces of the Republican coalition.
Well, I guess my thought, earlier you asked about surprises, and I think one of the surprises throughout this process so far has been Michelle Bachmann's failure to get any traction. The rest of the candidates had their moments in the sun and had their surges. She did not. So I think anyone would probably consider that if they were considering her for vice president. She just didn't ever get enough traction and get enough people to buy into her for whatever reason. And I'm not sure what those reasons are, but it just, and I think that's going to be a realistic part of whether or not she'd have a future role.
And Governor Perry took an early morning run and decided that he was going to stay in. So I ask you this, do you think he's really a viable candidate at this point?
You can never say never, but mm-hmm. he sure shot himself in the foot a couple of times and had a couple of very difficult debates. And just has not been able to recover from that. And I think when you look at who's attacking who, you really realize Mitt Romney spent the most time attacking Newt Gingrich. So you see, well, those two must be the ones that are most. Mm. Now we'll see what happens to Rick Santorum. But you don't see anyone going out after Rick Perry. In fact, I think there's a certain amount of sympathy for him right now, given what a spill he took.
Scott, any thoughts on Governor Perry?
Yeah, I still think I don't think you can quite assign him a toe tag quite yet. He's got 10-plus years of demonstrated executive experience, a state that has certain natural advantages, but nothing happens in a vacuum. He's had some very good executive experience. What he doesn't have is a team that has expertise outside of the state of Texas, and I think that was really a problem for him logistically and organizationally. Almost all of his $12 million that he's raised has come from Texas at this point. That makes it tough. Combine that with what the congresswoman mentioned, which wasn't just one lapse. It was a succession of lapses. That's a real tough one to come back when you're making it on national television.
Most pundits still say, and I think it's been perhaps an unstated assumption so far in our own conversation, that despite this tie in Iowa, Romney is the apparent nominee in waiting because of his organization, his funding, and because Gingrich and Perry did so poorly, among other factors. Do you, Congresswoman, concur in that, just as a predictive enterprise? I know you need to be careful with saying who you're for, but as just a predictive statement.
Well, you know, I would think that if he is considered, and if the Republican Party considers him, or any one group considers him the presumptive candidate, I think they're making a mistake, because that alienates a whole lot of people, because it disregards someone who may have an interest or a support for Rick Santorum or for Newt Gingrich. And so I think it's important for the Republicans to let this process go and to not let there be any presumptive candidate and just let everyone let this continue on and let the American people have their say at this. And then I think at the end of this, and I'm hoping the Republican Party won't make that mistake, because I think you'll see that coalescence that we've talked about earlier getting on board and supporting the candidate, as long as the process is allowed to play out and the media and the pundits and the Republican Party aren't saying, oh, no, he's it. Because that process is important to the American people. Having their say, being involved in it, that's very important to this whole process.
Let me turn that around, though, in terms of the Republicans and their history as far as presidential nominees, and that I think part of the, at least my sense historically, of why perhaps Romney has been seen this way is a characteristic of the Republicans in the past, and that's that they seem to be big on this idea of people getting their turn after they put in their dues, at least when it comes to running for president. I'm thinking of Ronald Reagan in 1980. You know, he put in his dues before George H.W. Bush, 1988, Bob Dole in 1996, arguably not the best choice, but, you know, it was his turn. McCain in 2008, just to name a few. George W. Bush perhaps jumped the queue a little bit in 2000, but you could argue that was a special case. So, Scott, do you think there's a sense among Republicans that this is Romney's turn, or is the party changing regarding that aspect? You had talked about Tea Party influence before.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that in this case. I think the rush to declare him the presumptive nominee is more born out of the punditry than it is the party at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a pretty wide disparity among party leadership, party stalwarts. And, you know, let's take a look. No one's really garnering more than 25% at this point, so you're not presumptive anything at 25%. Politics is about numbers. A guy like me looks at my candidate, and what is the equation to get us to 50% plus one? None of these folks are even close to that at this point. And so I think it's a little early to presume anything, and I think it's the whole process will shake people out. Organization and the ability to raise money will start to become very apparent, and there could be some real surprises there. So while Romney's looking good and you know, certainly is the strongest candidate right now overall nationally, I think it's too early to declare him the presumptive front runner from a party perspective. Things can change rather quickly at this stage of the game.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guests are Congresswoman Anne-Marie Berkel and Scott Armstrong of Armstrong Communications. Well, Congresswoman, I wanted to follow that up a bit and look again at the party more generally and think about these results. And Rick Santorum's tie with Romney suggests that there is at least one or perhaps two kinds of splits within the party between strong social conservatives and evangelicals, and then the rest of the party, perhaps those folks more focused on economics and maybe more moderate in other areas. There are different flavors within all of those things. Obviously, Tea Party movement is a big factor in all of this. So you've seen that this is going to all be worked out once a nominee emerges. But again, how is this going to play out in terms of the general election, and particularly thinking about the Tea Party as a factor, less predictable perhaps? So could you talk a little bit about that? Because they were some of the folks that put the wind at your back in your election.
Well, I think you will have some elements of, you know, there's always in any election, there's different factions, and everyone has their issue that's important to them and that's near and dear to them. And I think in this time and these days in the United States of America, most Americans are worried about jobs and the economy and getting this country back on a course where we're not spending more than we're taking in. So I think that that's going to be the overriding theme of this election and the vision for what we want our country to look like.
Scott, how do you see the Tea Party in particular as a force, say, at the national level versus the level at which the congressman benefited from it?
Well, I think it's maybe a mistake to portray it as a national force, because it's a mistake to portray the Tea Party as a homogeneous organization. It's not. It literally changes on a city-by-city, county-by-county basis. It's also a mistake to assume that it's exclusively the domain of the Republicans. While they don't back many Democrats, there are many disenfranchised Democrats that are Tea Party members, self-identified. Some estimates as high as 30%. So it's the jury's still out on that, and I think it's its first real test of national prowess. And you know, I'm a constant monitor of social media and that type of thing, which is the chosen medium that most Tea Partiers, I think, communicate in. There's a real dissatisfaction level out there born out of, I think, a newfound strength demonstrated in an absolute sea change of the U.S. Congress that kind of has them, I don't want to say confused necessarily, but in new uncharted territory, because running a national campaign is very different than running 435 separate congressional races. And there is no national spokesperson. There's no national Tea Party group. And so they're without a unified voice, and to most extent by choice that it's that way with the Tea Party. But how that translates into presidential politics, it's an area of concern, but I think at the end of the day, the congresswoman's right. The folks that tend to believe in a Tea Party vein of thought, I think ultimately realize that from their perspective, the president has done near irreparable damage to the country, and we have one shot to win it back. And I think ultimately people will come around, and most will coalesce around a candidate where the the sole focus will be taking back the White House.
Well, I want to follow up with you quickly and bring it back to then the other candidate. And again, going back to the assumption that you both have, I think, appropriately problematized, but nonetheless that if Mitt Romney, if he's the nominee, will there be an emphasis then for the running mate to speak to the more conservative, strongly conservative views and socially conservative views, or will they perhaps form a team where they can say, look, here are two moderates that can better manage the economy than it's been managed so far?
You have a tough sell with two moderates. I would think if Romney's the nominee, I think you take a look at a guy like Marco Rubio, mm-hmm. who's born out of the Tea Party movement, can help deliver a Hispanic vote, and delivers a major state. So I think you're going to have a rather unconventional VP pick if Romney, being pretty hardcore establishment, or at least perceived as such, I think you're going to have a fairly unconventional VP pick.
Well, let me end with the three questions that we normally ask, but I want to ask you to answer them not from your own perspective. We've done this before when we've had similar kinds of topics. Not from your own perspective, but rather thinking of the Republican presidential field at this point as a group. So first, and Congresswoman, we'll start with you. As a group, what's the title of the chapter of political life right now for these presidential candidates?
I guess I would go with skirmish.
And Scott?
I would label it who can take a punch.
Second, and Congresswoman, we'll come back to you. What collectively is this presidential field's worst trait?
Oh, gosh. I guess I'd have to say that their lack of situational awareness.
Scott?
I think the worst trait is someone foisted on them by the debate schedule, but it's to snipe on details to damage other candidates. I'd rather have them articulate a vision for what they believe in.
And last, Congresswoman, what has surprised you most about all of these candidates as a group?
I would have to say how swiftly and how fiercely they have attacked each other. I think the better way to go would have been to, here's what I stand for, here's why you should vote for me, and just disregard the other candidates and really stand on what you're going to do as President of the United States.
Scott.
I think they've had amazing stamina. They're operating 24/7. They're traveling constantly. They have absolutely no personal life. And I think all those things considered, they've had a pretty good performance. I think maybe we're starting to see some cracks in the dam with Newt Gingrich getting really nasty in the last couple of days.
So it sounds like for the two of you, you're kind of ending on a Ronald Reagan note here. That was Congresswoman Anne-Marie Berkel and political consultant Scott Armstrong. I think it's going to be an interesting year politically. So thanks so much to the two of you for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
Support comes from the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University, dedicated to the study and practice of citizenship, leadership, and public governance. Information at maxwell.syr.edu.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender and Kelly Coleman, with recording engineer Tom Fazio. Learn more about the Campbell Conversations by visiting our website, wrvo.org.